It is Friday, September the 7th. This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you here. Coming up, some believe the Trump administration is struggling in the midst of chaos.
There's a feeling that now the White House is being consumed by its own paranoia and its own infighting.
Lots of partisanship ahead of the next U.S. national election.
People are standing up, they are fighting back, and they are going together transform this country politically and economically.
Also ahead, remembering Hollywood icon Burt Reynolds, who died of a heart attack. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. Top Trump administration officials are denying they are the author of an anonymous New York Times opinion piece criticizing President Trump's leadership style. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, speaking during a visit to India, called the article sad, saying he finds the media efforts to undermine the Trump administration incredibly disturbing, in his words. Vice President Mike Pence's office said it was above such amateur acts. The Director of National Intelligence, Dan Coats, released a statement saying speculation that the New York Times op-ed was written by me or by my principal deputy is patently false. Others issuing denials included Defense Secretary Jim Mattis, U.N. Secretary, Nikki Haley, and then the Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin. The opinion piece follows reports about a new book by journalist Bob Woodward on the Trump White House, describing it as chaotic and dysfunctional. Reporter Henry Ridgewell is in London and tells VOA Sarah Williams about British and European reaction to the reported disclosures.
Well, here in the UK and across Europe, there is shock as well at these headlines, at this opinion piece in the New York Times. It's been top of the headlines here today, and there are questions being raised about really who is wielding the power in the White House. If I can pick out one headline in particular, there was a famous quote from Henry Kissinger who said, "If I wanted to call Europe, who should I pick up the phone to?" And somebody reversed that quote this morning and said, "Well, if I want to speak to the U.S. administration, who should I pick up the phone to? Who is really wielding the power in Washington these days? Who is making the decisions?" And those are the questions really raised by this opinion piece. And these are reverberations that are being felt across Europe and around the world.
Yeah, some of the reports have also indicated that apparently a decision that President Trump wanted to make, that aides, various other people, you know, removed this, you know, took it away from him because they didn't want these acts to be carried out.
Exactly. And within any government, within any administration, whether it's the presidential system you have in Washington or the different systems we have in Europe, to have senior officials, but those below the president, below the commander-in-chief, changing those decisions, seemingly undermining the will of the president, I think for any voting public, for any government, those are major constitutional problems. And to have that within the most powerful country on earth really brings home just how chaotic, really, the U.S. politics is seen here on this side of the Atlantic at the moment. And that is a worry, not only for those governments that support President Trump and are allies of the U.S., but for everyone. Because I think here there's a feeling that there is a lot of problems in the world that really need American power and American focus to resolve, whether it's here in the U.K. and the breaking story we've had in the last couple of days accusing Russia of poisoning using a nerve agent on British soil, whether it's the war in Syria, which seems to be worsening once again with the offensive in Idlib, whether it's the Middle East peace process, all of these require American attention. And there's a feeling that now the White House is being consumed by its own paranoia and its own infighting, and all of these problems are being neglected, or they're not having the focus that many of the U.S. allies want President Trump and his administration to focus on. And there's that fear, there's that tangible fear, certainly here in London as well, that a country that wants to be a very close ally, wants to develop its relationship further after it leaves the European Union, and really it doesn't know which way to turn at the moment, who to call and which way to go, because it appears from this side of the Atlantic that there is a lot of chaos in Washington, and it's not clear exactly when that will be resolved.
Yes, I know. Certainly within your own country, there is the continuing Brexit process, and that has caused a lot of concern and consternation on both sides.
Exactly, and that is causing a lot of chaos within British politics as well, and that's really being felt now. The politicians are returning from a six-week summer break, and the deadline for leaving the European Union, which is March next year, is approaching fast. And the chances of Britain crashing out without any deal with the EU seem to be growing by the day. They just don't seem to be able to agree on many issues. So you add that into the mix, the world's sixth biggest economy, Europe's second biggest economy, in chaos, and you add the fact that President Trump has this problem with his own administration. You have the midterm elections coming up. It adds to this sense across the globe that there's this accelerating spiral into the unknown, that we're entering a new era in global politics with America still at the head, but very much unpredictable about what happens next. And when you get the headlines from day to day, of course, we have Bob Woodward's book and his expose on the allegations about what's happening in the White House, and then the headlines today about this opinion piece from an insider. People wonder, well, what tomorrow will bring. We're used to watching out for President Trump's tweets every day. Well, now we have these whistleblower insider accounts as well. It all adds into the mix. And then, of course, it's election season on your side of the Atlantic very shortly, and who knows what might happen there.
That's Henry Ridgewell. He's in London speaking with VOA's Sarah Williams. Still ahead, our national correspondent previewing the U.S. midterm elections. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Next, an update on U.S. politics, from the loss of war hero and Senator John McCain, to hearings for Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh, to troubles for President Donald Trump, to a preview of the 2018 midterm elections. We discuss it all with our veteran political analysts, John Fortier and Jim Kessler. That's Encounter, this Saturday and Sunday, on The Voice of America.
Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This is VOA's International Edition. As we heard before the break, American voters are heading to the polls in 2 months to elect a new Congress and to render a midterm judgment on the often controversial presidency of Donald Trump. Control of both the House and the Senate and the representatives there is at stake in November, but the midterm election results could also have a profound impact on the Trump agenda and the next 2 years of his presidency. We get more now from VOA national correspondent Jim Malone.
Please welcome the President of the United States, Donald J. Trump.
With the future of his presidency on the line in November, President Donald Trump has become an increasingly combative force on the campaign trail.
We need Republicans in Congress. Today's Democrat Party is held hostage by left-wing haters, angry mobs, deep state radicals, establishment cronies, and their fake news allies.
Trump is counting on supporters like coal miner Kevin Abbott in November.
I believe the way Trump believes. I believe he'll, if the people quit roadblocking him, I think he can do amazing things. He's already done so much.
This man has got to go.
But Trump's tenure has also fired up Democrats. They are determined to take back the House in November to stop the president's agenda, including his call for more tax cuts and a border wall. Among those rallying Trump's opposition is Senator Bernie Sanders.
People are standing up, they are fighting back, and they are going together transform this country politically and economically.
Democrats should have history on their side, says George Washington University expert Laura Brown.
When you look at the overall landscape, what you do see is a very typical midterm election shaping up, and that is that historically speaking, the president's party doesn't do well. The country does, to a certain extent, see the midterm elections as a check on the president's power.
The yeas are 81, the nays are 18.
A Democratic takeover of one or both chambers of Congress in November would spell trouble for Trump, says analyst Bill Galston.
Number one, no more Republican-only legislation. And number two, House Democrats would then command the mechanisms of oversight, which is, after all, one of the principal responsibilities of Congress.
Trump allies also see the midterms as a referendum on the president, including former advisor Steve Bannon.
This is an up or down vote. It couldn't be clearer. If we keep the House, President Trump's program will continue on. If we lose the House, Nancy Pelosi will try to grind his program to a halt.
We're going to keep on fighting. We're going to keep on winning.
Trump is the central issue for both parties in the midterm campaign, says Gallup pollster Frank Newport.
I think Republicans will actually bring him up. Some of them will say, vote for me, because there's going to be a move to impeach Trump if we have more Democrats in the Congress. And Democrats clearly will say, you need to vote for us because we'll oppose some of Trump's policies. So I think he clearly is a central figure in this election.
Democrats hope to gain enough seats to reclaim a majority in the House, while Republicans are favored to hold their narrow edge in the Senate. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
And later in the program, the sounds of Boz Scaggs.
The news never stops. So keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
AP Entertainment correspondent Margie Zaraletta reports now that American actor Burt Reynolds has died at the age of 82.
Burt Reynolds was the top box office draw starting in 1978 for 5 years in a row. His films include Smokey and the Bandit, Cannonball Run, Deliverance, and Boogie Nights. Plus, he starred in the TV series Evening Shade. He was also a target of Hollywood gossip for his relationships with Lonnie Anderson, Judy Carn, Sally Field, and Dinah Shore. Reynolds said in a 1996 interview he regarded fame as not all that great.
It is the most seductive, damaging, despairing, invisible thing that can come into your life.
I'm Margie Zaraletta.
My colleague Lori London speaks with Las Vegas film critic Jeffrey K. Howard about Reynolds and his long career as an actor.
Well, I'm Generation X, so I grew up with Burt Reynolds my entire childhood, my teen years, my college years. There was no bigger star in the world, the 60s, the 70s, and the 80s. Remember, in the 60s, he was on Gunsmoke. He was Quint, and he was a interracial character, you know? So he was Indian and white. So that was a groundbreaking role even for the mid-1960s. But I remember Burt Reynolds. I saw all his films first run, from Smokey and the Bandit to, Gator and White Lightning and Longest Yard. And then especially in my teen years, Hooper. I loved when he was a stuntman. And not only that, he did musicals too. And he had a great sense of humor. He did Best Little Whorehouse in Texas with Dolly Parton, who wrote a specific song for the movie for them to do duet called Sneaking Around. And he lived here in Las Vegas for many years too. And he shot a movie called Heat here. And he was a well-known local resident. We'd run into him at restaurants. I just loved the man to death. I really did. And also his sense of humor. I loved him in Everything You Want to Know About Sex, We're Afraid to Ask, with Woody Allen. He was a switchboard operator when Inside the Body, when they were going to make love for the first time. So this guy not only could do movies like Paternity and do a dramatic side, and Boogie Nights, of course, you know, the great film he was nominated for an Academy Award, but he had a great sense of humor. And that's what I remember about him the most. He was so affable, so friendly, and that just came right off the screen like he was your best friend. And he conquered television with Evening Shade, you know, in the early 90s. I remember watching that show and just laughing my head off. And to this day, you know, he's admired by some of the great young filmmakers, especially Quentin Tarantino, who cast him in his new movie, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, but he was supposed to report to set in a few weeks, so he didn't get his last role with the great Quentin Tarantino. I had the pleasure and the honor of interviewing him for a movie called The Crew, where he was like an old-time gangster. And the studio sent me down to Miami, Florida, and I got to talk to him, and it was just one of the biggest thrills of my life, you know, because being from Vegas, him living here in Vegas, and him being such a local celebrity here, but just to see him in all these films from Silent Movie to Cannonball Run, I mean, I could stay here all day, Laurie, and just go through all his movies. And I'm not just kind of familiar with some, I know all of these films, you know, by heart. So we've lost not only just a great movie star and a great actor, but a great American too. You know, he was a country boy of heart. He was a stuntman too in the early days. I can't think of a bigger star than Burt Reynolds, and he's going to be missed. He really is.
Absolutely, and he always said that the actress Sally Field was the one that got away. I believe it was a 2015 interview with Vanity Fair. He said he still loved her, calling her the love of his life. She's speaking, you know, on the death.
Well, at 82 years old, he lived a long life, and he was in poor health the last few years. Mm-hmm. And he also did he auctioned off a lot of his items, you know, a few years ago, including the Smoking and the Bandit Trans Am that he had that was given to him from the movie, all his awards and hats and all kinds of stuff. So he liquidated a lot of things, and the auction was here in Las Vegas, believe it or not. And so when people start doing that in their later years, you kind of wonder, like, are they telling us something, you know, they're keeping a secret? So I don't know how poor his health was, but you could see him physically deteriorate over the years pretty quickly. But he was still working. He did a lot of voiceover work. He did cartoons. He did animated movies. The man never stopped. He was working up until his final days. He has a movie coming out this year. He has such a body of work, and it's a shame that he has to die for a lot of people to discover it. But a lot of people are saying, hey, I'm showing Smoking and the Bandit with my family this weekend. We're going to watch it. That's the greatest way to honor him, is to watch some of his old films and appreciate him. And there's so many on here, I wouldn't even know where to begin to watch, you know.
Sounds like he was, for many years, was considered the highest-paying actor in Hollywood.
Oh, he was. Oh, my gosh, the 70s and the 80s? Yeah, every one of his films were, I mean, crossing $100 million back in the 70s, that's unheard of. Only like movies like Jaws or Star Wars, only a few films would cross that threshold. But Smokey and the Bandit, you know, he was a tremendous success. And he also had a lifelong friendship with Dom DeLuise. He did a lot of his movies with him. So he had his own private little club of actors and friends that surrounded him that he did a lot of movies with. So he's just like one of the last living legends, I think. I really do. And it's a shame that we lost him today.
That is Las Vegas critic Jeffrey K. Howard speaking with VOA's Laurie London. This is VOA.
This is BizBeat.
High ceilings, brick walls, colorful fabrics adorn a studio in the city of Rome, busy with the sound of sewing machines and people working. Dauda Doumbia is a tailor from Ivory Coast, a refugee who fled ethnic tensions, who's now settled in Italy. Thanks to his tailoring skills, he, along with other migrant tailors, now work at this sewing cooperative created by Lydia Witt.
People are coming to Italy with many skills to offer, and so through the sewing cooperative, we're able to support refugee dressmakers using their skills that they come here with.
It's the sort of thing customer Desiree Marie Townley has been looking for.
Sustainable shopping, finding a community for expats, immigrants, artists.
Bakari Bamba, another tailor working here, says sewing is all he knows, but he's learning the language and happy he now makes money. For VOA's BizBeat, I'm Philip Alexio.
This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us here today. It's time now for a little something from the world of music.
Better bring a check around.
to the sad, sad truth, the dirty Lord down.
Boz Scaggs is an American singer, songwriter, and guitarist. He's best known for his worldwide chart-topping albums of the late 1970s and his hit singles. Born in 1944, Scaggs is still out on the road all the time playing to sold-out crowds who love to hear songs like his hit single, Lowdown.
Nothing you can't handle, nothing you ain't got. Put your money on the table, drive it off the lot. Turn on that old love light, turn a baby to a yes. Same old schoolboy game got you into this mess. Hey, son, better get on back to town. Face the sad old truth, the dirty Lord down. Put those ideas in your head.
After learning to play guitar at the age of 12, Boz Scaggs met American guitarist, singer, and songwriter Steve Miller, leader of the Steve Miller Band. In 1959, Scaggs became the vocalist for Miller's band, The Marksmen. The pair later attended the University of Wisconsin at Madison together, playing in blues bands like the Ardells and the Fabulous Night Trains. And in 1980, Scaggs recorded Look What You've Done to Me, a song he composed with David Foster for the movie Urban Cowboy. It reached number 14 on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 chart and is a super hit with fans everywhere.
Hope they never end this song. This could take us all night long. I looked at the moon and I felt. Then I looked again and I saw you. Eyes like fire in the night. Bridges burning with their light. Now I'll have to spend the whole night. Honey, yes, I want to spend it all on you.
In 1976, using session musicians who later formed the band Toto, he recorded Silk Degrees. The album reached number 2 on the U.S. Billboard 200 chart. It had a number of hit singles, including Lido Shuffle, which still today is played on radio stations everywhere and gets lots of downloads.
Lido missed the boat that day. He left the shack.
After a break in recording, Scaggs joined Donald Fagen, Phoebe Snow, and Michael McDonald, as well as others, in the New York Rock and Soul Review, and lots of albums and big hits followed.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. He said,
Jack's first marriage was to Carmela Storniola. They had two sons. He and his current wife, Dominique, grow grapes in California and have produced their own wine, of course, in between Skaggs' many tours on the road.
He be making like a feline, heading for the borderline, going for broke. Saying one more hit ought to do it. This joint ain't nothing to do it. One more for the road. Lead up. Whoa.
He's for the money. And I'm not kidding, this guy is entertaining all the time. If you'd like to see him in the next 3 months, no problem, because he's going to be in about 70 different places. So you should check it out, huh? Boz Skaggs. Many thanks, everyone, for joining us here on the Voice of America for International Edition. Good to have you here. Latest world news is straight ahead. And for our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Doug Magnus. Dave, it is Dave. I'm sorry, not Doug. What in the world is the matter with me? My name is Jack Jones. I hope you have a super Friday. Now some more from Boz.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, recently announced additional assistance to support achieving the goals outlined in the Bilateral Development Objectives Assistance Agreement between the U.S. and Nigerian governments, signed in 2015. $25 million will strengthen good governance by supporting state governments' efforts to bolster Nigeria's open government partnership commitments to improve transparency and fight corruption. An additional $1.5 million will support a healthier, more educated population in targeted states through the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, also known as PEPFAR, for a total of $26.5 million in additional assistance. The additional new funding brings the total U.S. government assistance provided under the 5-year Development Objectives Agreement to $1.1 billion. USAID is also working with federal and state health ministries to build stronger health systems with the aim of guaranteeing equitable access to quality health care services nationwide. USAID collaborated with Nigeria's Ministries of Budget and National Planning, Health, Agriculture, Power, and Education, as well as state-level government counterparts, to structure the Bilateral Assistance Agreement, which runs through 2020. The United States believes that as the most populous country in Africa with the largest economy on the continent, Nigeria holds tremendous influence over the future of Africa, Acting Mission Director Aaron Holleran said. USAID is committed to partnering with the government and the people of Nigeria to address its development challenges.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.